If you only have 20% to give and you give 20%, you gave 100%. Hustle should be part of a life cycle, not a lifestyle. Meaning, hustle is not part of your identity. It's a tool or a lever that you can pull when you realize that there is a goal that you want to achieve.
Welcome to The Lavenderette Lifestyle, the podcast on personal growth and lifestyle design. My name's Eileen, and I'm here to guide you to shine as your brightest self and create your dream life. We all have a light within and the power to create a life we love. Every Sunday, we'll share thoughtful conversations exploring how we can build a better future for ourselves and our world. Life is an art. Make it your masterpiece. Hello, my loves. Welcome back to the Lavender Lifestyle Podcast. It's Eileen. Today's episode is for the women who want to be able to do it all and have it all, to live a fully aligned and intentional life without the guilt of falling off in different areas of life. We talk about cultivating healthy ambition, embracing our seasons, making space for all the facets of our character, and celebrating both intentional choices to accelerate or decelerate in life. Our guest today is Amanda Getz. Amanda Getz is a 2 times founder, 4 times chief marketing officer, and was a single mom to 3 small children before finding love again. She spent 2 decades building and growing consumer-facing brands before shifting to writing, teaching, and coaching ambitious working parents on how to balance success and life. Quick reminder before we dive in, if you love planning and goal setting, you'll love our new Artist of Life workbook. This guided journal is beautifully designed to help you craft a life you love from the micro to the macro. Join thousands of others in creating your best year in 2026. Just go to shop.lavendaire.com. All right, on to the interview. Hello, Amanda. Welcome to the podcast. How are you feeling today?
I'm feeling good. It's a rainy day in Miami, so I'm ready to kind of like curl up on the couch after this and watch a movie.
Right. It's like a cozy Friday.
Yeah. I love it. I love it.
So why don't we start with your story? Tell us a little bit about your story and what brought you here to talk about ambition and toxic grit the way that you do.
Yeah. So I'm a first generation college grad. I actually grew up on a farm in central Illinois. My town is, I think, 800 people now. And my dad's the town plumber. My mom was a stay-at-home mom. And I always felt this competing pull inside of me of wanting to go and do something and build something, but also watching my mom be a stay-at-home mom. And that tug of war started very early of which parent do I idolize more? Which one do I want to emulate more? And I went off to college and I kept trying to treat life like a check the box activity. I went to college, found a husband, got married at 21 and got a job at a Big 4, you know, consulting accounting company, worked my way to New York City. And then, you know, kind of fast forward, found myself really at the height of my career. I was leading marketing at a public company, managing a team of 50 people and filing for divorce with 3 kids under the age of 4. Wow. So it led me to realize that this tug of war inside of me is something that I couldn't ignore anymore. I knew that I was trying to find alignment with who I was as somebody who wanted to go have big goals and achieve big things and do something that I couldn't see growing up. And I wanted to be home with my kids and enjoy being a mom and soften and do all of those things. And I think as women, we feel this tug of war so immensely because society kind of wants to put us in these buckets. Okay, you're either, you know, breaking glass ceilings, leaning in, being a girl boss, or you're over here, stay-at-home mom, trad wife. And I'm like, I'm both. Like, I'm both of those things. So I wanted to create a book. And really, the book started with just writing. I started writing for myself, and that led to writing a newsletter. And I could see that there were so many women feeling this same kind of tug of war inside of them. And so I went on to write this book, which is really about finding and creating space for all the parts of yourself that live inside of you in this kind of movie of your life that maybe you only allow one or two versions of you to kind of take over the whole script, when in fact, you still have the version of you that wants to play. There's the version of you that wants pleasure. There's the version of you that wants to just travel the world alone. All of those are beautiful parts of you. But I think we sometimes forget to intentionally write them back into the script.
Yeah, this is so relatable. I think every woman can relate to wanting it all, but feeling this internal tug of war between all the things that we want. And I love that your writing came from a pure place because you needed it as well. When you started sharing your work, like writing your newsletters, did you feel like you had already found a better way, like some healing, some balance, or anything like that? Or were you figuring it out as you were going?
It was both for sure. I started talking about this just online. I have this mantra, I'll go first. Like, I am a very vulnerable person because I think vulnerability leads to deeper connection and deeper relationships. So I was one of the first people in my friend groups to go through fertility treatments. And then I was the first in my friend groups to get a divorce. And I just found that the more that I opened up about different struggles I was having, it allowed me to feel less alone, first and foremost. But second of all, start to learn how I could use what I was experiencing to help others and also to like let them help me. Mm-hmm. I mean, as I was going through all of this, a big part of writing the newsletter is also finding other people who have been through the same thing and sharing what worked for them. But I will say that since my divorce started in 2018, it's been now 7 years, I work with a coach, I work with a therapist, I have tried things like ketamine therapy, I have tried a lot of different healing mechanisms to really help me understand the subconscious workings of why do I suppress that side of me for other people. So a lot of that, in fact, my therapist, a couple of her tools that she taught me and she's in the book are written into the book. So a lot, it's a both. It's definitely, I never pretend to say, I have it all figured out. Here it is. But I've gone through a lot and I've come out on the other side. And I think that there's a lot we can learn from one another by sharing those.
Time for a short break. The show is sponsored by BetterHelp. November always feels like a turning point. The days get darker sooner, and there's this quiet invitation to reflect. Lately, I've been thinking about the people in my life I haven't connected with in a while. We tell ourselves we'll reach out when we have more time, when things settle down. But what if we reached out now? We're healthier when we have community and support around us. And just like reaching out to a friend takes a little courage, so does reaching out for therapy. BetterHelp makes that first step easier. With over 30,000 licensed therapists, they're one of the world's largest online therapy platforms, serving more than 5 million people globally. With 12 years of experience helping people find the right match, BetterHelp connects you with someone who understands your needs through a short questionnaire. And if it's not the right fit, you can switch therapists anytime at no extra cost. This month, don't wait to reach out. Whether you're checking in on a friend or reaching out to a therapist yourself, BetterHelp makes it easier to take that first step. Our listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/TLL. That's betterhelp.com/TLL. Let's go into your book, Toxic Grit. First of all, let's define, what does toxic grit mean?
Yeah, I say that it's hustle without intention. Because I think this whole narrative of hustle culture being a bad thing is now also making us feel guilty. Like, we still, as ambitious people, have goals that we want to chase. And so if you're getting up at 5 a.m. to work on something, you feel guilty now because you're like, is this hustle culture? Am I, doing this bad thing? So I wanted to show that hustle should be part of a life cycle, not a lifestyle. Meaning, hustle is not part of your identity. It's a tool or a lever that you can pull when you realize that there is a goal that you want to achieve, that you can see why that lights you up and you're excited about and you're going to push. But when you push, you also have two other very important things. You have a checkpoint already in place to reassess if this speed is still the speed you want to keep going. And you have non-negotiables. Non-negotiables are the things that make you still feel like a whole human during that kind of busier part of your life, that season where you've intentionally decided, no, I'm gonna push right now, and that's okay. But I think the tricky thing for many people is when we use the word ambition, we think automatically it's about work, right? But I like to build in a rhythm where there are seasons of my life where I'm really ambitious as a mom, and I'm coaching my son's basketball league, or I am going to sign up as the classroom parent, and I'm being ambitious as a mom for a season. And then other things kind of go. And then there's seasons where I'm ambitious as a partner. I'm getting married next year, and there's going to be a season where I am just going to be really prioritizing us and connection and traveling and making sure we take a solo trip together. So this whole book is about creating new definitions of ambition, looking at your life holistically, and creating cycles for yourself so you understand that sometimes you're planting, sometimes you're harvesting, and sometimes you're just there, and that's okay.
Yeah, I love this so much, and I think everyone needs to hear this right now because you're so right. We went through the hustle culture and then now we've demonized it, but there was a part of it that's, it's okay to hustle if it's intentional. Like if this is what you chose to do and it brings you joy. I love this so much too, because life is all about seasons. It's not like one style of living forever. So this kind of gives all of us permission for whatever it is we want in this current season of life. I think that's the biggest part. It's like, it's okay.
Right. And we can't let societal trends dictate our life. Because if we think about any trend, whether it's, you know, the trad wife movement or, you know, lean in, break glass ceilings, girl boss, like if we think of either of those, if you let society tell you, well, that's what's on trend, do that, but that's not where you are in your life. The results, the byproduct is just guilt. You just feel guilty. So this is a permission slip to say, what season am I in? Let me look at this movie of my life that is unfolding. Kind of understand also what script was kind of written for me or given to me by maybe your family, your culture, your society, all of those things, and really taking it back and saying, no, I'm the writer, the director, the star of this movie. I choose to rewrite this script right now to say, I need this character of me in the spotlight. And sometimes that character is also like, I have a version inside of me. I'm a very like health conscious human, but once every 5 to 6 months, like I like to get drunk and go dancing with my girlfriends. And if I don't allow space or intentionally write that version of me in, I start to feel like dampened a little bit. I don't have my full spark because there's a version, there's a character inside of me who wants to let loose and go dancing and just, you know, eat French fries at 3 in the morning. And because we keep letting society say, well, these binary things, you're either this or you're that. It's like, no, we're all kind of ebbing and flowing in the middle.
I love that. It's like, we always want to like put ourselves in a box. Oh, I'm this kind of person. And then everything outside of it automatically seems like it's not okay. But you're allowed to be all the versions of yourself.
Exactly.
Going back to the topic of ambition though, I understand the principle is you want to hustle and be ambitious in a healthy, intentional way. But I think the problem is most of us have that negative connotation because too many people are ambitious for the wrong reasons. And so let's talk about that and then talk about how you help people unravel that, like how, you know, healthy ambition versus unhealthy ambition.
Yeah, this is a great one. This is where a lot of the inner work comes from, right? What are you chasing? Are you running from something or running towards something? And in the book, I say, you know, really ambitious people all share a couple of characteristics. The first is a belief that we are meant for more, a fear that we're going to be caught, that we're not that. And when you have those two things, one is this kind of finish line that you're sprinting towards, and one is this kind of thing that you're running from. And I always remind people that we should be focused on the former, not the latter, right? If you're constantly doing things out of fear that someone's going to find out that you're not good enough or you're not lovable enough. I talk about in the book the two biggest traps people fall into and why we fall into them, which is the significance trap and the urgency trap. And I'm sure you've heard this, like when everything is important, nothing is. And when everything is urgent, nothing is. So when we fall into those traps, it's important to understand why. So if I said in this moment, for the next 2 hours, work is my priority right now. I'm going to do this podcast and then I'm going to work on this deck that's really important for my job. And I'm really excited to kind of dive into it. And yet my friends text me, or I get a Slack from someone else and I stop what I'm doing and I allow them to come into this space that I've dedicated for work. Why am I doing that? Is it really as urgent as I feel it is? Is it really as important as I feel it is? Or am I scared that if I don't respond quickly, they'll think I'm a bad friend? Or maybe they'll withhold love from me. And you start to like kind of go deeper and deeper into the self-worth iceberg where you're actually operating from this very deep below the surface thing. And I have tools that I tell people, it's like, okay, in that moment when a disruption happens and or you've said, I'm at date night right now and this is my priority, and something distracts you, like a text message, a Slack, et cetera, you use a quick model, just like something like 10, 10, 10. Will this still matter in 10 minutes? Will this still matter in 10 months? Will this still matter in 10 years? Like, and you start to frame it. It's like, no, that Slack message could definitely wait 10 hours. Your friend could definitely wait 10 hours. So I really think that healthy ambition is when you're running towards something and you're able to set boundaries, not only around work, but around the other things that are important. When I'm with my kids, if I've said for the next 2 hours, I'm going to be a really present mom and get down on the floor and play with my son. If I pick up my phone to answer that email, which trap am I falling into and why? What part of my self-worth iceberg is actually triggering right now? And it, for me, my go-to is, will I still be enough? Am I enough? Am I as good? My therapist likes to call it the gold star pattern. Will I still get a gold star if I respond in an hour? And that's the thing you have to start to get really curious about to find the difference between pushing towards something versus you're just running away from them catching you.
Wow. Let's talk more about that self-worth iceberg because it's so deep. I can totally relate to this as well. A core of so much of our fears is that you're not enough or like I'm not worthy, I'm not loved or any fear around that. How do you help people work through that, right? They recognize that they have these fears and these patterns. I think awareness is the first step, but then what?
Awareness is the first step. Like, and I think 90% of people are still operating above the surface of the iceberg. So getting very, very curious, when you are triggered by something, where is that coming from? And understanding, like, I have kind of these different like layers that I think about. Is this societal and like how society is framing me and how I think I should be showing up? Is this generational and part of my family lineage. I come from, you know, a family that didn't have a lot of money growing up. And so if I'm triggered by something, is it because it's coming from that? Am I trying to prove that I can do something just because of where I came from? So I keep kind of going through, is this about my lived experience in my own trauma? Am I operating from... I had this one therapist one time use this kind of weird analogy, but it helped me. She was like, throughout your life, you make a stew inside of you, and the stew is just there, and someone comes along and they like turn up the broiler, and they didn't add to your stew, but it just starts to bubble over, and you're operating or you're responding from all of the stew that other people gave you. And for me, like, that's so real because I went through a really pretty bad divorce, and now getting married again, I have to constantly check myself and say, am I actually upset at this moment about this specific thing, or am I bubbling over from years past and I'm pattern matching? So it's just getting really clear on these different layers of where it's coming from and trying to isolate it to say how, like, what am I actually reacting to? And does the size of my reaction match the actual thing that's happening? And I think that that's always a helpful reframe for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's helpful. And when you're working through this, do you like journaling, or what's the ways that you work through?
I mean, I'm a writer, so I write constantly. I write all the time. I'm a big advocate for writing, just getting things out, like non-judgmental, just letting your brain go. I'm also just a huge proponent of having an independent third party who doesn't have a horse in the race to talk to. I think we could have best friends who love us so much and we love talking about our stuff with. I have like three really close friends that I probably talk to at least once a day, but like if not, you know, we're very involved in each other's lives. And still, I make sure that I am not processing things with other people. I allow myself to process it on my own or with a therapist and come to them with the thing. And luckily, I'm with someone who also is a believer in therapy and goes to therapy. And sometimes we'll hit a moment where we're like kind of like maybe missing each other. And we'll both be like, you know what, let me go process this and come back to you when I can fully share the so what. Like, I'm feeling a lot of feelings, but I can't process it right now with you. And so I think that separation and finding your preferred method of processing so that you can come back to situations and talk in need statements instead of just saying, I feel this. Okay. The second step is a need statement. In the future, I need X, I need Y. And being able to get there and say, can we meet in that place?
Yeah. It's better to like figure out your, like process it on your own and then come back when you have the call to action.
Like, yeah, exactly.
Literally. Instead of just like going back and forth with feelings.
I think that this is really important. Most arguments are actually one person saying, I feel this, I feel this. This person saying, I feel this, I feel this. This person's not feeling validated or heard, so they just say it louder. No, I feel this, I feel this. When really what's happening or what should happen is person one goes, I feel this. Now the next person says, okay, what I'm hearing is you're feeling all of these things when I do this. And in the future, you'd like me to do that. Now person one feels seen, validated, their amygdala can calm down and they can start working from, you know, the place in their brain that has logic and reasoning. And then person two can then say, okay, now my turn. I feel this when this happens. Okay, now you validate them. But that's really hard to do in most situations. Everybody's just trying to feel heard.
All right, my loves, let's take another break for today's sponsor, Shopify. When you're building something new, it's easy to feel scattered. One moment you're designing a logo, the next you're researching payment systems, then you're trying to figure out inventory management. And suddenly it's 2 a.m. and you haven't even worked on the thing you actually love creating. I've been there. When I started Lavendaire, I thought I needed to become an expert at everything. But here's what shifted everything. Realizing I don't need to master every skill, I just need the right support system. Shopify is the commerce platform behind millions of businesses around the world and 10% of all e-commerce in the US. With hundreds of ready-to-use templates, building a beautiful online store becomes simple. You don't need any technical skills. Their built-in email and social media tools help you find and connect with the people who've been searching for exactly what you're offering. And behind the scenes, they handle all the logistics, inventory management, payment processing, shipping, returns, so you can focus on bringing your vision to life. Turn your big business idea into with Shopify on your side. Sign up for your $1 per month trial and start selling today at shopify.com/TLL. Go to shopify.com/TLL. That's shopify.com/TLL. Okay, I want to go back to this topic of ambition because there's a lot of I think most everyone has experienced burnout. What is your book or what do you have to say on the topic of burnout?
I've been there. I was, for anybody that's experienced a panic attack, I was one of those people that twice in 1 week found myself in ERs thinking I was having a heart attack when it was sure enough a panic attack. And burnout truly comes from a place where you don't allow what I call a spin cycle. If you think about a washing machine, the last part of a washing machine cycle is called the spin cycle. It runs really fast to get all of the heaviness out of the clothes before they go to a dryer. Think about how many times in your life you say the phrase, if I can just get through to this date, things will slow down. And then when that date comes, you blow right through it and you're just like, well, no, if I can just get to this date, things will calm down. So in the book, I talk about the concept of a spin cycle and how you need to run it and plan it. Now, a spin cycle is just an intentional period of time that you are wringing out the heaviness of the season, the chapter, the time before. And I talk about mini spin cycles, what that needs to look like in a day. So let's say you have a busy work day. And you go straight into a date or time with your family, and you didn't run a spin cycle. Chances are you are showing up in the same intense, stressed out state that you were in from the day. So I talk about like different ways to honor the transition between those different parts of yourself throughout the day. That's in and of itself a spin cycle. But I also believe in spin cycles every month. Are you taking 1 to 2 days where you step away from everything and to check in with yourself to say, is this still in alignment with what I want? Is the movie going in the direction, or do I feel a character is off screen that I need to bring in? And then I really do a monthly spin cycle to look at the next month and say, gosh, I have a few needs that are not being met right now in this current way I'm living my life. It's time to write in that crazy girl that needs a night of dancing. Oh, it's time to write in this girl hasn't had a lot of sex this month because she's been so stressed out. Like, I need some moments for pleasure. And you get more intentional. And then I think spin cycles can be bigger. I have had 3 bigger spin cycles in my career where I look at work and I say, okay, I've been driving 90, 100 miles per hour. I'm going to drive the speed limit. I am just going to pay the bills and I'm not pushing towards anything. And I allow myself a season of just living my life and not living for the next goal. And I think those spin cycles, both in the micro, in the day-to-day, those moments of transition between, in the months to months, and then those bigger ones in the seasons of life, because life expectancy, like we're starting to live longer and like with the AI and how everything is going, like who knows how long we're going to live. You can't push for 40, 50 years straight. You have to say like, this isn't a year that I'm going to prioritize other things over work. It may not mean you can't work because like me, I have bills to pay. I have kids, but I don't have to drive 100 miles per hour. I can just drive the speed limit and that's okay too.
Yeah. What I love is the intentionality behind it. I feel like most people, they're go, 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 but then life kind of forces them to slow down, whether it's burnout or something happens. It's almost like we don't make the time to take the break unless we have to. It just makes so much sense what you're saying is like you have to carve in those moments that in your day, in your week, in your month, in your life in general to like really intentionally be slower.
Yeah. And I think naming it has helped me. It's like, oh, I'm feeling really heavy right now. I need a spin cycle. Yeah. I need to alleviate this heaviness. Yeah. Okay. And I think it's really important when we're going so hard, we have all these shoulds. Oh, I should rest. I need to decompress. I need to brain rot. I need to sit on the couch all day. And those are great. But if you're not setting intentionality around them, you just kind of end up laying on the couch while it's kind of half working and then looking at things that you're like, oh, I should really be doing that hobby I keep saying I want to do. And all of a sudden the cognitive rest didn't happen. The physical rest might have. You laid on the couch.
But you felt guilty the whole time.
Your cognitive and emotional rest were MIA.
Yeah. Yeah. Another part of rest is I think some people fear that if they slow down or if they rest, then they'll never be able to like ramp back up. Because they're like, I'm afraid I'm going to stay and rot forever. What is your take on that?
There's a whole chapter on when characters grow toxic.
Yeah.
Because every version of us has a healthy place and then it grows toxic. So every version, even like parenting can take over your life. And all of a sudden you haven't seen your friends or you haven't gone dancing or you haven't gone on a vacation with your partner. And you're like, why do I feel so disconnected from myself? I have a whole chapter on when your characters grow toxic, what you need to do to kind of bring them back. Because every version of us, even the lazy version where you're like, hey, I need some like lazy decompression time. Well, when does that start to teeter on toxic and it's depriving you from actually doing the other things you want to do, like working out or seeing your friends? I think it's a really fascinating math equation when you look at the number of years that we're like kind of adulting really hard, you know, like these 40 years that we're adulting really hard and working. Let's call it like 20 to 60. If you start to break down the number of weeks that we have and how much of those weeks we actually are working versus not working, the problem we're all facing is we are reserving our non-work life to Saturdays and Sundays, right? Like, oh, I'll go see my friends on Saturday and Sunday. I will work out Saturday, Sunday. I will rest Saturday, Sunday. We've now taken away so much of our life. We're living just for 2 days a week for all these other parts of ourselves, other versions. So when a character is growing toxic, I always talk about your 5 to 9. What is happening after work? Many times, especially my coaching sessions, when someone's coming to me and they're saying, I'm burnt out. Like, I don't know what's happening right now. I'll say, okay, like, let's look at your last week. What happened after work? What did you do from 5 to 9? Well, I got through my work stuff. I shut my computer. I headed to the couch. I scrolled on my phone. I turned on the TV. I ordered food. And then I went to bed. Okay. So you're living your whole rest of your non-work life in 48 hours when you have this whole week. So I say, let's take back 1 5 to 9. Just one night a week. What is one thing, what other character needs to come onto the movie of your life? Maybe you do need to see friends. Maybe you're feeling a miss of fun and levity. Maybe you're feeling a lack of creativity and you need to get sparked. Maybe your job became really not what it was before and it's not lighting you up. So maybe your 5 to 9 should be going to try something else, taking a piano class, trying something. So I always start with the 5 to 9 and say, what would it look like? What are you feeling a lack of? And what would it look like to just take one of those back? And that usually starts to like fuel the fire and of, it's like the little spark that somebody needs to be like, oh, well, maybe tomorrow night I'll like go to that run club I've been saying I wanted to go to. And over time you start to realize that you can live a whole life outside of work that kind of lights you up.
I love the concept of the characters. Like, how do you have an exercise or how do you help people name the characters in their lives?
So in the book, I talk through that everyone has kind of this set of 10 characters. And I mean, the big three are what you can expect. It's your work, your CEO character, the one that's just like got big goals for your career. Then there's the partner character, like if you have somebody in your life, but even if you don't, it's the version of you that is craving companionship with either other people or taking care of family. And then the parents, if you are choosing to have kids and that's something that you're choosing for your life, those three can take over the whole plot. So you have to go back and meet the other characters that existed before you met your person, before you. So when you think about what we're like before we find another person to spend our life with, we kind of confuse someone that we want for all of our life for like all of our life. And it's like, before I met my person, I had people I would go on girls' trips with. I had people that I would work out with. I have industry friends that I would talk about work with. But when we meet somebody, all of a sudden we feel this like weird desire, not even a desire. Sometimes it happens like subconsciously where all of those other things fall away and we expect this other person to assume all of those roles. And I think it's really important for us to re-meet some of those versions of ourselves, the version of you that likes to explore, the explorer. What did you do to explore before you are where you're at today? What did exploring look like as a kid? And so you kind of go through in literally like the first part of the book, there's three sections. The first part of the book is just meeting all those characters and really understanding the role that they did used to play in your life and where they are now. So you can identify maybe the ones that need a little more screen time.
I love it. I love also the metaphor of like, this is the movie of your life and they all need some screen time.
And they can't all be on the screen at the same time either, because think about any movie. If there were 10 main characters, that would be like the most chaotic, confusing movie ever. We need to intentionally move each character and develop. This one's storyline is going to go a little bit. This one is off screen. Now this one's going to go a little bit.
So we all have all these characters. I think the next question is, how do you find the right balance for how they show up in your life?
Yeah.
I think you talk about something like intentional imbalance. So let's go there.
Yeah. So there's an exercise that I ask people to go through. It's called the perfect day exercise. And I'll kind of take you through it so that anybody listening, they can maybe do it on their own. But you sit down and allow yourself to kind of like be away from your current life. Maybe you just go to a park one day and you sit down and you close your eyes and you visualize your most perfect day from the moment you wake up and you look around your bedroom. What does your bedroom look like? What do the sheets feel like? What's outside? Like if you could wave a magical wand and you woke up and lived the most perfect day, what would that look like? Who would you see throughout the day? What would you do? All the way through till your head hits the pillow at the end of the day. Now, I did this exercise when I had a VC-backed startup and I was on a female founder retreat in Tulum with like founders that I know you would know and from huge brands and amazing people, right? I was in this weird place where I was like feeling really disconnected from myself. And I didn't know what I wanted to do next. I had this VC-backed company, but it wasn't like lighting me up anymore. So I did this exercise And when we were done, we had to go around and say our thing. So I went first because I was like, you know, overachiever, straight A student. Mm-hmm. I was like, I'll go first. So I explained like my day, I was single at the time. And my day was like, I woke up and I had a partner and I had a slow morning and I went for a workout with friends. But I, at the time, like I just moved to Miami and I didn't have a lot of friends. And I went through the day. I remember I did a little work at like a desk until the kids came home and I was with the kids. And then we had a party, like everyone in the neighborhood came to our backyard and we grilled out. And I told all of that. And then the woman next to me went, her day started waking up to be on the Today Show because she was just revealed on the cover of Forbes for her brand. And I sat there and I was like, I messed up. Like I'm at a female founders retreat and I didn't talk about work. And what that revealed to me is in that season of life, I was craving community and companionship and love and slowness. So after that retreat, I made the decision to sell my company. And I then went for the next year and a half. I got a job that was just a VP of marketing job somewhere, and I built community. I found love again. I found the most amazing man, and I spent more time with my kids. But the funny thing is, I did that same exercise a year later, and my perfect day was me going to Barnes & Noble with the kids and getting my book and my kids being like excited to see my book. And then I had a keynote where my kids were backstage and I was like giving this huge keynote. And so this exercise, the point of me sharing all this is that you have to stop and kind of allow yourself space to say, what am I screaming for deep down that I'm not allowing? And reshuffle things around so that those versions of you can get more screen time. And then you just keep checking in with yourself. I do that perfect day exercise once a year. I take one solo trip a year and I do that exercise. I sit down and I say, okay, what does a perfect day right now look like? And it always pushes me towards things that I have probably written off the script for a while.
I love this so much. And the fact that you get to rewrite this, because we do change. Like we might write one version and think that's what we want for the rest of our lives. But
yeah,
no, like you said earlier, we have different seasons where we need something different in our lives. And that's so beautiful.
In that moment, you think like, oh, I'm a female founder. I've raised millions of VC dollars. And you think that like, okay, well, this is my path. And in that moment, it was screaming to me that I was ready to get off that path. And yeah. I had to work through all of the feelings that I felt, which was like shame and guilt. Yes. And I had to work through that. And again, it just keeps going back to, we can't let society or generational or familial things dictate where we are and what season we're saying we're in.
Because it goes back to your tug of war that you were sharing in the beginning that many women deal with. They're like, oh, if I'm 100% focused on my career, can I still want the family? Can I still, you know, like there's fear of how other people perceive you for making that decision, whether it's one way or the other. So what is your advice to women who are struggling with that?
I think finding other women who will support you, because I think if we scroll on social media, we're going to be reflected back all the shoulds, because that's what our algorithm does, especially if you are in the current of one direction for your life and you're like, well, maybe I kind of want this other direction. Your algorithm's not swimming with that current. It's still feeding you all the things that you've reflected to it. So for me, it's been so important to make sure that I one, celebrate women when they choose to accelerate or decelerate. Like, let's continue to, and again, I keep using this kind of like trad wife and like, you know, lean in, break glass ceilings, girl boss type dichotomy. But in fact, let's celebrate all the women who want to stay at home with their kids and prioritize that season. Because the stats are 80% of women who have paused their career want to go back to work at some point in some capacity. Maybe that's a side hustle all the way to like going back full time. And one in two women who are working are considering a pause or a downshift. We are all contemplating when is the right time to ebb and flow back and forth. Mm-hmm. And we have to continue to celebrate one another when we accelerate or decelerate.
Yes.
And we can't just say like one person's hustle is hustle culture and you're projecting an unrealistic expectation. No, it's her season to hustle. Yeah. Let's go.
Yeah.
The other woman who's saying, I'm stepping away from my career because I want to be home with this baby. You go. We love that. We support it. Let's do that. Yeah. And I think that that's how I want to keep projecting the energy into my life. And I keep wanting to attract other women who support that.
I love that so much. It's like celebrate both because women are not meant to just be in one season our whole lives. We are ebbing and flowing. That I think it's in our nature, right? We have our monthly cycles.
Right. We're four different people every month.
Yeah, it just makes sense. That's it.
Yep.
What tips do you have for women out there to take back time in their lives for themselves? Because you got to find some way to carve the time back.
So I always start with what I call the minimally viable day. So let's start with non-negotiables. So let me ask you, like in a day, what categories are like non-negotiables for you to feel like kind of like your best self?
Some creative work, some movement.
Movement.
Being with my dog.
Okay.
Walking my dog or taking care of him or something.
Yeah.
And then some form of connection. I'm an introvert, so I just need a little bit. I don't need like so much social life.
So four different characters, four different versions of you. Okay. So now what's the ideal of each of those? Like maybe an ideal movement. Like for me, ideal movement is I get like a 1 hour workout. We have a home gym in our garage. So 1 hour workout, I go to the sauna and I swim. Obviously, I don't have 90 minutes to 2 hours every day. We now need to say that's the ideal. What's the minimally viable version of that? So what is the minimal part? It's like a knob. Like sometimes we turn the volume way up. Sometimes we're maybe at a one or a two. So I've created the minimally viable version of my non-negotiables to say, okay, if I can't do the full thing, I'm going to walk on the treadmill for 20 minutes and do a 10-minute sauna, do a quick rinse, and now I feel like I did my thing. So that's like my non-negotiable. And I think we as ambitious people, especially if we were straight A students, we're kind of like, well, if I can't do it at 100%, I'm not doing it at all. When in fact, the quote I like to say is, if you only have 20% to give and you give 20%, you gave 100%. So if you only have 20% to give for your extrovert time, for a little connection time, but you give that 20%, that was all you had to give that day. And that's okay. And so for me, I say the same thing with like my partner. There are some days where I'm fully able to transition and like make space for intimacy and real like connection time. And there's some days that I don't have that. So what's the minimally viable version of that, that I still feel like we had connection time? Okay. For us, it's phones away, facing towards each other, having one conversation before I'm like, peace out, I'm going to bed. Mm-hmm. So it's just thinking about step one, what are the non-negotiables? Step two, creating the ideal scenario of those, like in an ideal world, what would it look like? And then you create the minimally viable version of that. And I call that the MVD.
Yeah, because sometimes your ideal is like, I want like a 4 or 5 hour morning routine. I want to stretch for an hour.
Right. And then you're like, wait, I just scrolled TikTok while I had coffee and now I don't have any time. Yeah,
exactly. That makes so much sense though. But I love that. It's like, don't give up on your non-negotiables, but just do the minimum of them.
Yeah. It's the compounding results of life, right? Even if you only have 2% to give today, if you show up and do that 2%, that compounds and you just keep saying, this is a non-negotiable. And so that's kind of number one, is the non-negotiable piece and allowing yourself to go from ideal to minimally viable. The second piece I'd say specifically for women is to honor the transition. Most of these characters that live inside of us don't play nicely together, right? Like the version of me that's at work does not play well with kids. I embody different values and goals and characteristics and energy states when I'm in that kind of CEO character than when I'm in a mom character. The mom version of me is silly and playful and like, I just want to make my kids laugh. And that's different than the like goddess character, the version of me that wants intimacy. That version of me doesn't want to see kids or Slack.
Right.
So it's honoring that we need transition sequences. We need to create rituals so that in space to be able to get into that version of ourselves. And I think we shame ourselves for like not being able to fully embody our whole selves into ebb and flow. But again, this everything I write about is about just intentionality, about creating that space so that you can show up in that version of yourself. And so my kids, they know that at 4 o'clock every day, so I have to like jump off my computer, go pick them up from school. And when I come home, I go become a mommy. I go take a bath and I like put on music and I have to soften. And they know, are you going to go become a mommy? I'm like, I'm going to go become a mom. I'll be right back. And I go and I soften and I get off my computer and I get off my phone. And then I come out and now I'm like, okay, I'm going to cook. We're going to play. We're going to do homework. And now I have my patience for them because I took a moment for myself to kind of honor the fact that the version of me that existed all day doesn't do well with like playing with kids.
Can you give us more examples of like transitions?
Yeah. Think about going on a date after work, right? Like, and luckily for women, we have built-in transition sequences. We get ready, like getting ready for something, standing in the mirror and like listening to music and doing our makeup and our hair. That in and of itself is a transition sequence. But thinking about times where, let's use work and movement, because I think that that one is pretty, you know, universal. Think about a time where you were in work mode and you went straight to try to do a workout. How many times did you pick up your phone to maybe check an email or check a Slack or see if that post is doing well? And you're not in workout mode. You're still in work mode and you didn't transition into the version of you that freaking cares about the workout and what you're going to do and what your body needs to feel and connecting to your body. So I have a transition sequence. I have my deep work time in the morning and then I go into a workout. I have to transition and I have a little transition sequence. I have a playlist that I start. I go and get this one energy drink that I drink. I can only drink this much of because I get really caffeine makes me, but I'll just get that and then I'll put in my AirPods. And now I'm like in this like Pavlovian response. I'm like, okay, I am now fully embodying the part of me that cares about getting stronger and has workout goals and wants to be here.
Yeah.
So it's the idea of this, like these almost Pavlovian responses, but these intentional rituals that we create to say, hey, body, we're now going into this mode. And the last part is literally saying it out loud. I will literally be like, all right, it's workout time. And every other character, you're on the bench. Like we are in workout mode. And I'll say it with like when I'm sitting with my kids, okay, we're going to play for the next hour. And I'll put on an Alexa timer. Okay, we're playing for the next hour. I can keep my phone away for an hour. I'm not a surgeon. Like nothing is going to happen. So it's just about the intentionality of creating the ritual and then stating how long you're going to be in the next character and honoring that.
Yeah, I love this so much because it's so helpful. Sometimes we're in another zone, but we're not mentally in that zone, right? Like we weren't ready. We're just like, I'm still thinking about work, but my body's trying to work out, or I'm trying to be with my friends. And this makes so much sense. And then just the use of like music, because music can shift our state so quickly.
So quickly.
I love this so much. There were so many great takeaways from today, Amanda. If you were to leave the listeners with like a final lesson or takeaway today, what would that be?
I think the final takeaway I would leave everybody with is honoring compartmentalization in your life, that it's okay that you can't be everything at once, but allowing yourself to try to give all that you have to the version of you that you want to show up for that person that's in front of you or that thing that's in front of you. So I would say intentional imbalance is the result of that. It's about saying, hey, I know that I can't be a great worker today because I'm going to prioritize a slow day or more present with my friends. And that's okay. Because I know that there's going to be a season or tomorrow where I'm going to push, and allowing yourself kind of the ebb and flow of life.
It's so amazing. I think this heals like the perfectionist tendencies in all of us that want to show up perfectly in all areas of life, but that's literally impossible. So the fact that you're being intentional about the imbalance, in a way, it's still whole. Like everything is still whole and nothing is like, it's okay. You know, that I think that's the biggest thing, is giving yourself permission and then showing up where you want to show up, where you think it's important.
Exactly.
So good. Okay, Amanda, where can our listeners find you online?
They can find me on Instagram, The Amanda Goetz, or you can just go to amandagoetz.com to learn about the book and everything else.
Amazing. Thank you so much for sharing your knowledge and wisdom today. It was so good.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you.
Thanks so much for listening to The Lavender Lifestyle. If you like the podcast, please share your support by leaving a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You can also subscribe to our podcast YouTube channel at youtube.com/lavenderlifestyle and follow our Instagram @lavenderlifestyle. Sending you so much love. Bye.